Welcome to episode 4 of the GAA Performance Podcast. Our guest this week is physiotherapist and former Dublin hurler Sean McGrath. It feels like every week now we're hearing about a different GAA player suffering a dreaded ACL tear, the injury every player fears. And Sean specialises in anterior cruciate ligament injuries. He was a physio for my own ACL injury and he was top class. He talks to us about what are the causes of an ACL tear. Why do they seem to be getting more prevalent now than ever for GAA players? He talks to us about prevention, and he gives us the key components of what should an ACL rehab plan look like. Sean's way of doing things are a little unconventional for the GAA world, but that's exactly what we want to hear about and what we love on this podcast. He is absorbed by his work, and as a former player who had his own playing career derailed at times by serious injuries, he's motivated by and obsessed with finding ways and new ways of treating injuries and making a difference. He played for the Dublin minor hurlers and footballers. He played for the Dublin under 21 hurlers in an All-Ireland final. He played for the Dublin senior hurlers on the squad for several years. And he captained Kilmacock Crokes to a county title, Sevens All-Ireland, the Blue Star. And he talks to us openly and honestly about his own injuries, regrets, finding a life balance as a GAA player and after GAA. He tackles perceptions, outdated perceptions around age and injury, especially for anyone who's currently or ever has suffered an ACL injury. I really hope this podcast makes a difference, but I wish I had access to something like this before injuring my ACL, so I'd recommend it to anyone who's involved in or interested in the GAA in any way. So I hope you enjoy and hope you can learn loads from this.
Thanks a million for your time, Sean. You're over in Costa Rica. Sunny Costa Rica. You can see a bit of a colour on your jaw there. It's not from Dublin anyway. But thanks so much for your time.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm over here. I wouldn't call it a colour. It's a bit of a burn, to be honest. Irish burn. But yeah, over here doing a bit of surfing. Well, trying to surf.
Fair play. Lucky for some. But yeah, we know you're a physiotherapist and a former Dublin player, and you specialize and you worked with a lot of players with ACL injuries. And I suppose the narrative at the moment is that these ACL injuries with young GAA players are more prevalent than ever, or there's a perception of that, because I don't know whether it's from social media or the media coverage of it, but it seems to be that way. And the narrative is that that's to do with player burnout and the amount of games that young players are playing. Do you go with that narrative?
Yeah, it's definitely a contributing factor. Like, I think there's player burnout from the amount of games that players are playing in, but also the training demands are higher than ever, as in everybody wants to be fitter, faster, stronger. There's a massive emphasis on the strength and conditioning side of things now. So players are not just, they're probably playing the same amount of games, as in there's that congestion of fixtures in that age bracket of 17 to 21, where you're playing for multiple teams. But when you add in the strength and conditioning demands on top of that, the amount of times that players are training, I think the demands on players at the moment are huge, especially as amateur athletes. I think in the GAA, we're trying to replicate, you know, like the way professionals train, and ultimately the players are just being push, more training than ever. And they just don't have the same recovery time periods as professionals do.
And for GA, like, basically, do you think the ACL injury is more likely to occur for a GA athlete? I know you're working over in Whistler with winter sports and, you know, dealing with a lot of like big injuries, especially ACL injuries. And like, is it something that you see as you know, the gameplay of GA makes it more likely that, you know, as opposed to other sports?
Yeah, I think there is, like, whenever I show the Gaelic games here to people in Canada, they just think it's absolutely hectic. The amount of physical demands required for the game are huge. You need to be elite in every physical attribute, really. You need to be strong, fast, change of direction has to be good. The demands of the sport definitely do. There's lots of cutting and change of direction for ACL injuries is the biggest risk. So there is a lot of those. But I also think the game has changed a lot. There's a lot more, or the tactical side of the game has changed a lot. There's a lot more change of direction, maybe less long periods of straight line running, and lots of shorter shorter play, which ultimately is resulting in more and more change of direction moments in the game. So yeah, the GAA would definitely be a risk. But there's also lots of things you can do to prevent, and we'll get onto that later, I'd say.
Yeah, so I suppose the big question is what do you think are the causes of ACL injuries for GAA players?
If there's lots of causes, right, and every case there's got to be context when you're analyzing the cases, but I'd say if I had to see, like, there's obviously some common themes with the ACL. So like in GA specifically, load management would be like your number one. So like too much training and mixing that with not recovering well enough from the training, building up unnecessary fatigue via like your running, your gym sessions, or whatever it is. Can we get more from that kind of training with building up less fatigue, let's say? So just being a bit more specific with the training. And that all results in the athlete just being globally fatigued. I think that is a huge factor in the GA at the moment. I think the fixtures is the easy thing to kind of analyze and say, right, you know, there's just too many games. But ultimately, if you live the life of an intercounty athlete at the moment, it's the training is it's huge. The amount of demands is massive. You have like 2-3 pitch sessions minimum, like a team meeting here and there twice a week, and then 3 or 4 gym sessions. Like it's the level of professional standard, the amount of training that they're doing, but the recovery periods aren't there.
Yeah. And what are the kind of the other causes, the other major causes? You've got load management, which you're saying is essentially fatigue. And I imagine as well, from my own experience, probably a lot of lads doing a bit too much on their own as well. But what would be the other causes?
I would say injury history is a big one. So a lot of athletes I've seen with ACL injuries, they either have had recent injury, recent pain or prolonged pain, or a list of injuries, and ultimately in the GA there is this kind of culture where you just play injured, you play at 80%, you play at 90%, and that's where, when you play like that, the way you move changes. So your biomechanics change, your ground reaction forces change. And you can build up more fatigue, and then you're just more susceptible to doing your ACL. That's a big one. I would say strength and conditioning considerations. Like, so there's a big push on like size and muscle mass and being heavier and having more presence on the pitch. I think especially for younger athletes, when they're breaking through from like 16, 17, 18, maybe carrying less muscle mass, and it's just the easy thing to kind of target and say, right, well, this athlete, if he wants to compete at this level, needs to be strong. But strength is not always it's not correlated with just muscle mass, especially in field sports, and especially with GA. You can be strong and extremely light, and carrying that extra like kind of mass or hypertrophy or bodybuilding mass on the GA field is going to put you it's more for your center of mass or your body to control. It's more work for your body, again builds up fatigue, and then you're more susceptible to doing your ACL. I think from an S&C point of view as well, like just like variability, like having variability in your plan. I don't see that as much with GA lads. A lot of the athletes I speak to, it's just this kind of like push-pull leg split, a typical kind of bodybuilding, they call it a bro split or whatever. It's not really preparing you for the demands of GA, which is a lot of change of direction, a lot of acceleration, deceleration, like I think the last time I looked at it for Gaelic football, it's like 1.6 kilometers of high speed meters. So a lot of high speed running, in 60 to 70 minutes. So it's like that unnecessary weight or muscle mass is not, it's not required. And it certainly puts you at risk for ACL. I think the training considerations in that S&C is from a, like, if you're just doing those splits, you're not really preparing for specifically to do with the ACL. It's quite a big knee valgus, or when your knee goes inside your foot in a change of direction or a cut, where you're most vulnerable for your ACL. And that's not really trained or exposed in programs too. And I think that's one of the reasons that I personally see it happening, or people are more at risk.
Like what you're explaining there, kind of, it shows, I suppose, that this, a lot of the stuff, I suppose, is controllable, or it's in our own control to kind of set those programs or control our own load, you know, have our own S&C, you know, be aware of our own injury history. You know, where I suppose I did my own ACL, and there's a lot of people who are, you know, I suppose there are some people who do their ACL and they're like, you know, I was doing everything wrong. It was inevitable it was going to happen. But there is an awful lot of, like, the belief when you're going through that process, you're told, you know, this is 1 in 10 or whatever. I can't remember the exact data, you know, do their ACL. So it's kind of like, it's inevitable that, you know, if you're playing long enough, you will do it. Like what you're saying there doesn't really correlate with that.
No. So yeah, I would completely agree. I would say that a lot of the contributing factors to doing your ACL are actually quite controllable. And when you actually do the analysis or take an injury history from athletes that do their ACL, you can see trends. You know, you can see trends in their training from like 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, even months, years into the injury, and things that weren't dealt with in their injury history. And their load spiked massively leading into the injury for a couple of weeks. And those things are fully controllable. Like your S&C considerations that we spoke about earlier, they're all very controllable too. And I think the hard part about this is that it's never going to be just black or white. We can 100% prevent this, but I think there's a lot more you can do as an athlete, and that you can take responsibility for as an athlete, that is going to decrease your likelihood of an ACL injury happening. 100%, I believe that.
So it's not a case of being lucky or unlucky.
No, certainly not. Not from the cases that I've dealt with, not from the history that I've, or the injury histories that I've taken from athletes, and not from what I'm reading and research. It's ultimately the ACL injury is you're going into a position that your body can't tolerate, and at that moment in time. And there's lots of things we can do that are in our control that can prepare your body to be able to tolerate certain positions and certain things you do. Like there's risk everywhere in the world. There's risk in sports. There's risk in lots of the activities we do. But there's also a lot of things that we can do to decrease that risk. And the ACL is no different.
So what do you think are the main steps a player can take to avoid the chance of doing their ACL?
From the load management point of view, I would say tracking your training load. So, like having an Excel sheet or whatever, and tracking your training load, and rating your perception of the exertion of that training. So your RPE as to how difficult you found that training session. And you will start to see trends. Like if you start seeing trends of your RPEs, as in you gave a 9 out of 10, or you felt that your exertion was 9 out of 10 after that session. If you're seeing a couple of weeks in a row of those sessions, you know that you know you potentially need a break, or you need some variability in your training. From a load management point, or from an injury history point of view, I would say it's challenging because you know, as a professional athlete, I think there's that continuity of care with physios, and the injury history of each professional athlete is tracked over time. And with new physios come in and new coaching staff come in, they know an in-depth history of every athlete and their injury history. In the GA, that's never going to happen unless it were to turn professional. So some personal responsibility on that. So identifying your injury history, knowing exactly what it is, and getting it assessed consistently, like, so seeing a professional. And a big thing I see on that it is very common with athletes is they're just not in pain, so they're able to train and they've no pain for months, but they had an ankle injury a year ago, and everything, when you look at them, they don't run well, they're not changing direction off that side, they're favoring one side all the time, and they're things that athletes don't really notice, I think. And when you go into a fitness professional and you get a physical assessment done, they're things that you can highlight, and you know, it's kind of like a green flag, yellow flag system, and a green, yellow, and red flag system, and you will tick the boxes on what you feel you can improve on that athlete. And then if you improve enough things that maybe are considered a deficit or not as good as it could be, you're going to decrease your chances of getting an ACL injury for sure.
And what about on the S&C kind of side of things? Because I know, obviously, I did my ACL and I did my rehab with you. Like, the S&C that I'm doing now and that I did throughout my recovery, but that I'm doing now afterwards, like, it's just another planet from what I was doing before. And, like, a lot of the stuff that you talked about earlier in terms of causes for it. But, like, yeah, like, what would be the main differences that are the main points for the differences?
Look, it's very difficult, right? I'm going to say that from the start. From an S&C point of view, there's so many things that are you have to consider as an S&C coach. Like, ultimately, I've been in a team scenario. It's an impossible job of a strength coach or a strength conditioning coach to manage 40 players or 50 players and make it specific and individualized. It's just not possible, right? So, but from an injury point of view, that is, if you have had any bit of an injury history, that is probably what you need. You need some individualization in your plan, in your program, working on your weaknesses, and developing and maintaining some of your strengths is very, very important and beneficial if you've had an injury history. And something else that I would say from the team structure point of view is that, like, you're kind of in the team structure and you're a 31-year-old, you've had an injury history the length of, like, you've had so many injuries, and you're on the same plan same program as a 17-year-old who's untouched. So I think that's something definitely to consider. And as an amateur athlete, you have college, you have work, you have 5 hours in the week to train. You want to make that training period as beneficial and specific to you as it possibly can. So, like, no wasted sessions, no building up kind of fatigue for just the sake of building up fatigue. And like, I suppose there's levels to this as well. From an S&C point of view, you have your beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And, like, if you're at that stage of a beginner, you need to learn the basics. You need to learn, like, how to do, like, a full depth squat, and build that, how to hold a front rack position, how to get into vulnerable positions and tolerate them well. And then the intermediate and advanced, you start to move into, you know, your power work and your low rep ranges, strength work, and high level plyos is a big thing. And having some structure to your training plan, like, so, and this is an athlete responsibility thing. I think so many athletes are just walking into the gym now and they're just doing what they're told. Just the program's laid out and they're just like 3 sets of 10 of back squat or whatever it is, and they don't even know why they're doing it, how it's going to get them better, and there's just no engagement with it. There's no intensity to it then. And I think just having, like, a structured plan around, like, the specific demands that you're going to meet in the game and in gameplay, and having a program built around, you know, your acceleration, deceleration, change of direction, they're like physical competencies that you're definitely going to be exposed to in GA, and they're definitely things you can train for. And if you're more competent at those three tasks in a Gaelic football or hurling game, you will massively decrease your chances of doing an ACL, because they're the the three things that you're going to do the most in a game. If you're not building up fatigue in those areas during a game, you're going to be less fatigued, and there's just going to be less chance of you doing your ACL.
When you're talking about the S&C side of it and the plyos, I suppose kind of an example for, like, I suppose a lot of teams, you know, you'll have your S&C where there'll be three kind of easy box jumps, and they'll walk and jump on one and land, and jump on another and land, and jump on another and land. As opposed to, I suppose, what I would do doing with yourself, which was some quite advanced, you know, jumping like with right cues and, you know, mechanics, or like high depth jumps. And like, there is a massive difference, like, because one of them, you're literally getting nothing. You're pretty much getting nothing out of, where, as you said, it's individualized and it's more difficult. And I found as well, when you're saying about the bodybuilding type training, I don't think people realize quite what that means, but like, yeah, like for the, from what I took from runaways, like, bodybuilding is essentially to tear a muscle for it to recover, where you don't want the muscle to be torn, because then it's to fatigue. You just want the muscle to be prepared for the game, essentially. Is that, am I right in that?
Yeah. So, well, there's,
well,
two
in season,
there,
right?
In season. Yeah. So with the plyos first, right? So plyos is the biggest contributing factor to plyos is just your intent. So your intent, your aggression, and how challenging it is a way of driving those demands. So we did like some quite aggressive depth jumps, and single leg depth jumps, which are very demanding on the body, but you were prepared for them, and it's a new stimulus, and that's ultimately what strength training is. You're just trying to drive a stimulus for your organism to grow, and whatever you experience in your life via the gym or via your activities or whatever you do, the more you do of it, the less chance you're going to get hurt doing it. And that's what I mean by preparing for the demands of GA, as in, right, you're not going to do a depth jump in a GA game, but like, let's say the one or two times that you do get caught in the air, or you come down from a big jump, like, you're going to be prepared for that. And your body has experienced that, and you experience those things as a kid and as a child when you're playing. And then, you know, I think we spoke about this a lot during your training time, is the amount of sitting time, and just that Western culture of we do way less. So yes, in the gym, we're going to try to get you move in different ways and challenge your organism to create a new level of what you can actually tolerate. And so many players are just, they're either getting nowhere near their potential as to like growing that level of ceiling as to what they can tolerate. And they're just walking so close to that cliff of, like, you know, anytime the demands get too high or they're too fatigued, they'll break down. And I personally think that, like, from a training point of view, if you're building that ceiling or that tolerance of physical competency, you're just, things are going to be less risky for you. Movement in games is just going to be, it's not going to be a challenge for you.
That's kind of a lot of biomechanics and stuff like that as well, in terms of like your range and your, I suppose, being safe in different ranges. Or I remember you're like, you completely stopped me from back squatting or lunging. Nothing was on my back, everything was on my front. You went from, you know, the traditional of no knees over toes to like, you're really pushing the knee over the toe. Like, a lot of, I suppose, traditional ways of thinking in terms of the gym just completely went out. And with that, ego training as well.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think for you, we're ultimately, if you peel it right back, and we were to say, right, your specific goals were to prepare for the demands of GAA. And to do that, you have to do quite athletic things in the gym. And the majority of those things require you to be able to like get into a front rack position, hold a barbell in a front rack. And then you can build a split stance, you can build a reverse lunge, you can build a front squat. And they're your three kind of big compound movements. And then, just like building the other forms of athleticism. And the knees over toes thing, I think, is it's huge on the internet at the moment, but like the start of a cut is your shin angle is completely behind your foot. So that's the early stance in the gait cycle. And then the shin moves into above the foot, which is your mid stance. And then the shin moves in front of the foot, which is your toe off. So for you, for your knee injury, it's like in the media, every knee injury is fixed by just training knees over toes. And that's not correct. It's you have to train all elements of movement. It can't be just any specific area. I think for you in particular, we recognize those areas of weakness that you had, and then you just globally become a better athlete by addressing the things that you're weak on.
I think with the SNC side, like, it's hard to even, I suppose, like the training that I would have been doing on my own in the gym when the team were doing their own session, as I was kind of the later stages of my rehab were kind of just back to being on the field. Like, you literally had at a stage where the players and coaches were asking what I was doing to almost copy it, you know, because it was so different. But like anyone who's played the game could look at what I was doing and seeing that this is match specific, like, and you know, like it was a lot of lifting heavy load, but for like one rep or very dynamic exercises, a lot of ISO holds, a lot of plyo jumps. That's, as you said earlier, it's again, it's kind of very much preparing you for the demands of the game as opposed to bodybuilding.
Yeah, and look, that is very difficult to administer that or run that in a team scenario. Like, that's like 30 lads, even just from a logistical point of view, putting you know, a lot of people don't have pin squats or they don't have pins in their gym, and that's harder to logistically negotiate with 30 or 40 athletes. But for you, you know, we could be really specific because you were in a rehab period and you were going to a commercial gym, and you had all those facilities, first of all, and you also built the base of being able to tolerate those higher level things. And you know, I think a big thing you see is you know, there's two ends to it. Like, the basics still stand. We still had you doing all the basics of human movement, i.e. squat, push, pull, overhead movements, all those things. But and we spent a lot of time on those. But a lot of people won't regress themselves enough to that level. They won't go back to basics and build that kind of base and kind of learn how to move again and build some confidence back in their body. Like, you see that so much in the gym of lads going in and they're just being crippled underneath the bar, or their plyos are all over the place, or the complete opposite. You see some really talented, genetically gifted kids and adults, and they're just doing what someone else that has nowhere near the capability genetically as them, and they're not being challenged, you know? So that's where the individualization, I think that's a big principle in the GAA circles that isn't being, you know, looked at enough. I think it's this kind of one intervention is going to fix all, one PDF program of push, pull legs, and just kind of like tick the box of all your strength and conditioning is complete. And that's, you know, we're prepared now. And I don't think that's the case. And I think it's up to the athletes to ask themselves, like, am I really being challenged here in the week? Like, do I feel like I'm prepared for this game, or are games coming and I'm trashed from a game? Like, it takes me days to recover from a game. If you're getting those kind of symptoms, you know that it's just a massive spike in your load every time you go and play a 60 or 70 minute game of Gaelic or hurling.
I suppose for like in-season training, you know, two of the things that I found massively kind of beneficial myself, and two things that I kind of get asked about a lot in the gym, is when people see me doing it, which is kind of central to your programming, would be quarter pin lifts, like whether it's quarter pin squats or quarter pin split squats, like where you're getting a really heavy weight, but like you're resting it on the pins. And then also just kind of the rep ranges of like a lot of stuff, like, you know, building, you know, two reps, or build into one rep every 20 seconds. And it's very like, yeah, it's very obviously very different to your traditional 3x5. And one of the things that I find from it is that like my lifts are getting heavier constantly. I'm constantly hitting new PBs. And then the other thing that I'm finding is that I could train the next day. I often do it after training sessions. I'm not feeling like, you know, pain in my legs from the sessions. So you might explain a lot better than I would ever be able to, the reasons for that. And then I'll be able to tell people when I'm in the gym exactly why I'm doing it better.
I think in season, right, the thing you're trying to protect the most is just fatigue. So, but if you were to take an eagle view of like your career as an athlete, if you were to take it in like 5 or 10 year terms, you know, if you're picking the main lifts like a squat or a reverse lunge or a deadlift, like every year are you putting some kind of weight on those lifts? And the big thing with athletes is they're not doing that consistently year on year. And the in-season period of with GA, it could be 9, 10, 11 months, and they're doing no in-season training because they just have so much fatigue with games and pitch sessions. So the big thing for you was we were trying to maintain some kind of strength during your in-season, but also you found it quite beneficial, as in from a nervous system point of view, you found that it was helping your game in season. So we kept it there, and you weren't building any fatigue because you were doing shorter ranges of motion. And it's as simple as that. It just wasn't as fatiguing a session, lower rep ranges and higher load. And we're doing all the work we were doing was work that's going to get you some gains with the minimal amount of fatigue built up. And that is ultimately it. That's the principle of your in-season training is try maintain or make some gains on your movements in the gym, and then save your fatigue, save your energy for pitch sessions and game sessions, because ultimately that's the priority in season. Is the last thing you want is players rocking up sore and tight from gym sessions. And I've been there before as an athlete. I was quite slight, and I would say on the weaker end of the spectrum for my strength work, and I always found that difficult. I just could never get a period of training to actually train properly over the years. I never got like a 3, 6, 9 month period. I was just constantly playing games or training. And that in-season programming is so important for the development of younger athletes to keep their resilience and offset or decrease the likelihood of them getting injured. And you're developing their ability to tolerate the demands of Gaelic and hurling. Keeping their development over like the 3, 6, 9 year period, like they can look back on that period and say, right, I put 10 pounds or 5 kilograms or 10 kilograms on my squat every year. And I was consistently growing and progressing and getting better. And a lot of GA athletes won't ever consider that.
I suppose a lot of the kind of the stuff that you've referenced so far, you're talking a lot about like personal responsibility. And I suppose a lot of that falls into the GA and just the amateur status of it, which makes it difficult across the board. Like, you know, and I think for myself, like having, you know, just been, I suppose, not long back from ACL injury and recovery, like it is something that, yeah, you kind of had to be there to kind of know the full complexities of it. And it's something that a lot of players like fear and stuff like that. But I suppose I took a lot of lessons from it. And I suppose I wanted to go through a couple of them with you, which might help people who are kind of early in the phase or coming through it at a later stage. But like one of the main ones was, I suppose, the amount of time that it takes. I think that with any injury, people always tell you, you know, like take your time, whatever, but it would be seen as like an achievement to be, I always seen it as an achievement to be back before you were expected to be back, like to be really quick back. It shows how hard working you are and how naturally strong you are, or what an athlete you are. But I realized that like, it might seem like common sense, but actually the time is needed to get, like if you're back too soon or if you rush it, like that's the last thing you want to be doing. And I realized how that came across into pretty much everything in life and everything in the game. The quick results might be great immediately, but down the line they're an issue. And likewise with that, that the way to avoid that is by listening to, finding experts and listening to them. And they're both in the GA, we don't have access to amazing experts. Realistically, we really don't. Even at county level, we don't have access. So you kind of have to be able to find those experts and then patiently listen to them.
Yeah, I think with the time aspect, and so when you're coming back from injury, you want to keep things as objective as possible, so that there's no subjective kind of, oh, I feel good, I feel right, I feel ready. They're all subjective. Objective is just your testing. So like your hop testing, your jump testing, your range of motion testing, your strength testing. And if we can tick all your objective markers and we're consistently testing athletes, it takes away from their subjective, perception of how they're doing. And I think for you, it took time, but we tested you every 4 to 6 weeks, and you were hitting your milestones, but ultimately the test was telling you how you were doing. It wasn't, oh, I feel like I'm putting in work and I should be back at this time. And athletes will fall into that trap a lot, that they'll think that they're putting in work, that they're training hard, they're doing, you know, 4 rehab sessions a week or whatever it is, but they're not. They're still not hitting their milestones. They're still not hitting their strengths tests. They're still not hitting their scores and their objective measures. And then it's up to the professional then to just hold them back and be honest with them about that. And I think we had a lot of honest conversations during the process about your rehab and about where you were at and where you felt you were at and where I felt you were at. And there was often a lot of like conflict and contradiction there. But ultimately, in the long run, I think that's going to serve the athlete a lot better.
Yeah. And I suppose you can't really argue with when you're failing tests. Like, that was kind of the big thing. Like, I would have found from one of the good things about working with somebody who's played the game themselves, you kind of feel like you can kind of push on them, that kind of approach. And whereas it's like, no, this is the test and you're still not able to do it. And until you're able to do it, you can't go on to the next thing. There's no real arguing with that. But I suppose to list off kind of the other lessons that I found, I kind of took a note of a few. I found that like there's a lot of looking back and saying, you know, like I want to get back to, you know, I was that strong, or I was able to do that, or, you know, I need to do this to get back to there. And the reality is that after you do a cruci, you kind of, through your rehab, you're doing a full year of rehab. You're actually, and different type of training, especially with us, you're actually becoming a different type of athlete. So what you're moving forward to is very different to what you should expect, something different than what was before. And then likewise, everyone's rehab is different. So like, you kind of feel like, you know, someone else is doing their crusade, you kind of want to talk to them about it because they know what it's like, but it's very, very different. I also found that, you know, you have to do everything. You kind of have to re-practice everything again. Like, so, you know, you could do the plyo jumps and the depth jumps, but like to get confident and kind of proficient and natural at anything game related as well on the field, I felt like you had to practice it. So you had to go down to the ball wall and practice catching again, even though your depth jumps and plyos were fine. And I felt like every step is a confidence level. There's a kind of a biomechanical level. There's so many steps to it. And that is a process. But once you kind of accept that like a lot of other injuries, you can come back and then other things just kind of naturally fall into place. I felt with the cruciate, it's not like you have to kind of do everything again. And then it will come back, but you have to practice it. And I also found that what you were good at before, you know, like kind of to avoid frustration, you kind of generally will be good at them again. And then like I struggled with plyos always, and I was always very strong in the gym. So the gym side of it, I ate up, and the plyos like really held us back. Like, and I suppose when we accepted that, and I was saying to you, like, you know, what's going on here? Like, why is my plyo? You were like, well, were you good at plyos before? You know, so, and then just that mental side of it as well. How difficult it is, like, especially the beginning, like to accept that, like, this happened to me and how long it's going to be. And like, I'd done my MCL about a year beforehand, like, and that's very tough. And then I suppose the perception side of it as well, to be prepared for, like, when you come back, yeah, you kind of really need to, and that's kind of something to not rush back to, because there's perception with coaches that like he's not gonna, especially if you're a bit older, he's not gonna be back, like, or he won't be the same player. So you're better off taking your time and coming back where you're able to hit that ground and perform amazingly in training. Because if you do come back when you're not fully right, and you're showing them that you're actually not fully right, you're actually just reinforcing that belief. So like taking the time, I think, like we got a lot out of like being back training on the pitch before being kind of ready to play, but just for the to pick up steps from it. But yeah, I felt that like if I could do that, was one thing if I could do again, I would just wait until I was ready to just make an impact. And again, that comes back to the patience, but they're my my lessons from it, which you're probably laughing your head off, because each one of those took a lot of head banging from you to get me to.
Yeah, look it's, and they're not new problems, they're very common. And I think it's a culture thing in the GA with all injuries, not just ACL, of trying to rush back and get back quickly. And I made those mistakes definitely in my own playing days, and I regret them a lot. You know, trying to get back for games that just don't matter, or trying to get back for trainings that just don't matter, and sacrificing your long-term physical health, because ultimately the only thing you can offer to a team like is your physical competency, you know, especially at an elite level. And so, you know, getting yourself right and taking that personal responsibility as an athlete and saying, right, I'm just not right, and getting that testing done, and like the tests were telling us what to do in your case, and doing that was very beneficial for you, because you could see it. And it's one thing telling an athlete, but I think when they can see it, it really resonates with them. So yeah, there's so many learnings in that. It's a big process, like a year, like, you know, a lot of the research is indicating that a year after your ACL operation is the time period to come back. So not to come back within that time period. But that doesn't mean to say like that we're not doing more challenging things in the gym. Like you were beating your milestones in certain strength aspects, like your knee extension. You were doing your knee extension like 2 to 3 weeks after your operation, your knee extension machine, and you built that to a maximal load, and you were passing your testing on that very early. But then you're jumping, you're landing, your plyometrics, your sprinting was all slower. And you know, the timeline, if we had to say that from your strength testing for the first 2 months or 3 months, we would have said like a 4 or 5 month period would have been good for you. But then the minute we seen you sprinting, running and jumping, we were just like, this is 6 to 9 months now. And having someone being objective with you and telling you that, because ultimately as an athlete, you definitely have a time period that you want to perform in, and you're trying to, every season matters, you're trying to get back as quickly as possible. But in the long run, I don't think that's going to serve you.
Yeah. And I suppose just to kind of talk about, you know, the keys to the key points that make up a really good ACL recovery, like what would you say they are?
So when the ACL injury happens, like there is discussion now about non-surgical intervention for ACL, but definitely getting an MRI, getting an accurate diagnosis, seeing a knee consultant, knee specialist, and seeing a physiotherapist, and getting a prehab period done prior to your operation is very strong in research at the moment for quicker return to play, decreased swelling and pain post-op, getting all your ranges of motion back quicker. There's a lot of evidence for a prehab period prior to operation. Early intervention post-op is key. Like, so key milestones there in that phase is getting your knee extension back as quickly as possible, and getting your knee flexion back, and getting all your range of motion at the hip, knee, and ankle back. It's an operation is a very serious and it's a big intervention. So respecting that, respecting the fact that you're on crutches, you're like all your hip musculature, your core, everything is off and regressed prior or post-op. So giving them, you know, time and attention and really regressing your rehab in that early phase so that you're not skipping milestones and then you're jumping into, let's say, squats or double leg squats and you're not actually using your quads during those movements. That's a big thing, I would say, a big mistake, just jumping the levels too quick. And that like brings you in. So like your case was very interesting, as in you progress at an individual level. And I would say that's a big thing for people, that if they do have an ACL injury and they're post-op, that accepting the fact that some milestones they're going to get quicker than others. And just because one person is running or jumping or doing some form of physical milestone in their ACL at 3 or 4 months doesn't mean that you have to be doing it, or doesn't mean that you're behind them, because you'll probably be ahead of them in other areas. And, you know, a lot of that comes down to your injury history, your previous physical activities as a kid, right into your teens and adults, and your training history. Like the more competent you are at certain movements, they're gonna come back to you quicker than others. The return to sport period is probably the most challenging period of the process. So, like mixing in your plyometrics and your pitch work, your ball work, your proprioception work with still maintaining and progressing all your strength work is the most challenging period, the most time consuming period of the rehab, definitely as an athlete, and the most challenging as a coach or a therapist or a fitness professional, because you have so many low demands to manage. You don't, you know, you're fatigued after a pit session, and then you're debating whether your athlete should go in and do a gym session. So managing that period is probably the most challenging. And I think for you, that's probably where you were challenged the most, and having that structure in your week via the app we were using was so beneficial for you, because, you know, it was quick feedback. You're able to say, right, this, I don't feel good. I feel tight. I don't feel well. And then you're able to alter things. And week on week, we changed things consistently, like whether we were doing 3 pitch sessions or 1 pitch session, depending on your symptoms. And that's a huge part of your ACL rehab. Everybody is like, oh, should I do this exercise? Should I do that exercise? Like that's way down the priority list of, you know, your weekly and your monthly load, like how you're actually tolerating your gym and your pitch sessions and your plyos and your sprints. That was key. And that leads into your tracking and your adherence and support. Like, you know, you were very diligent with your tracking and all your numbers and your response of how you were feeling and how you were tolerating sessions. And that was the personal responsibility you took in the process of tracking that and being connected with your body and listening to your body and then that allowed for such accurate prescription of your load and what you were doing. And that's the key. That's the key to a really good ACL rehab.
I think three of the things that I kind of just stood out for me there and what you were saying was, I suppose, the prehab and the importance of it. It's also heartbreaking when you literally get, you've done the injury, you've done a ton of rehab, you got to the stage where you're getting good lifts again, your quad has got back nice and chunky again, and then you literally go into surgery to come out the next day and you've got like a noodle leg, you know. It's literally heartbreaking, but it definitely makes a massive difference. And then that process of kind of, I suppose, I didn't find actually a full extension of the leg that hard to get to or a bend, but getting from a bend to a full extension, like as in like a leg extension kind of movement, was the hardest thing I've ever done. Like we got there pretty early, very early, but it was excruciating. Like I have videos of doing that with my dad helping with the resistance or trying to kind of help the cues or whatever, or put his hand underneath to kind of at least make me feel like reassured with it. That was one of the most difficult things ever. And I suppose one of the things you're kind of talking about as well with load and just in general, like physios and S&C, run that world, you know, people always talk about you know, kind of personal responsibility and getting people to track and getting people to be accountable to themselves. And it is obviously really important. But I think something that kind of like obviously was a big issue with me, like there's a lot of athletes out there who are actually the other side and they just do themselves so much damage. Like, and I obviously come into that and they just do way too much. And, you know, that was a big thing in that return to play that I was facing. Like, and I was saying to you, like, you know, why am I feeling this? Why is this fatigued? Or, and then when you came back to me and you're like, well, look, I gave you, you know, 3 sets of this at like a quarter range and you did like 5 sets of double the amount at full range. And you did that little extra more, a little more every single day. I'm looking at it. And that works out at probably like an extra like 3 days of, you know, in 2 weeks, like, you know. Yeah. And then you're wondering why you're tired. And I don't think people kind of talk about that enough. As I know Paul O'Connell used to talk about how much he had to be saved from himself. And it is a problem with a lot of athletes. And as I said, like a lot of the S&C and physio world is targeting people who need the help to become more accountable. But there are a lot of athletes who do themselves a lot of damage. Like,
yeah, and that's a culture thing. You see that across the fitness industry of this, you know, the harder you work, the better results you get. And that's just not true. And you know, that was the case with you. Like, we had a couple of friendly discussions about it. You know, you were, as an athlete, you want to do more. You want to do the extra inch, go the extra mile, and you were doing extra work that wasn't benefiting you, and we're just building up fatigue, and that fatigue is taking away from the work that's actually going to matter. And that's the reason that load management and that kind of tracking matters. It's, you know, all movement is good movement at the end of the day, but when you're trying to get specific goals, like you're trying to run faster or rehabbing from an injury, you have to be specific in the work that you do. Like, not everything is going to help. And some of the things, some of those extra things that you do, they could maybe be taking away from some of the benefits or some of the stimulus that we're trying to drive in other areas. So just being accurate with your prescription of what you're actually prescribing the athlete. And then, like, I know from a physio perspective, there's, you know, a lot of physios are frustrated because they know that the athlete is just going to either not do it or do too much. And you know, I think that's where working with you remotely and through the app, like, we were able to track that and we were able to flag it earlier. And, you know, in an older system, when that technology isn't there, we're kind of wondering, oh, well, I can't really remember what I did 14 days ago. And, like, there was a conversation I think we had that, you know, you were saying, oh, I didn't do anything extra. And I was able to just look back 3 weeks earlier and see that you were doing extra work. So, yeah, it's definitely a fitness industry thing of trying to do more work to get better results. But that's even more the case in GA. It's just, you know, there's that competitive edge to the game, and everybody wants to do better and get better, and they think the best way to do that is just do more.
I suppose kind of the lack of knowledge and the lack of awareness of a lot of the, I suppose, rehab and, you know, avoiding the cause of ACL injuries, but also a lot of serious injuries or constant smaller injuries, is definitely leading to shorter GA careers. You know, like, there's a lot less older players playing the game, especially at intercounty level, but even at club level. I would notice in Dublin especially, like, yeah, there's a lot less, you know, 30-year-olds playing, and like, that should really be your physical peak.
Yes, for sure. Like, breaking into your late 20s and early 30s, you've 10, you could have 10 years of gym work on another athlete. You could have 10 years of a cardiovascular base built up versus a younger athlete. You know, you've playing experience, you've more perspective, you've more life experience, and therefore you're more well-rounded as a person. Like I remember specifically Niall Corcoran. Like, he played hurling with Kim McCudd, and he played with Dublin for a number of years, and he was 36 and he was he was beating everybody in every fitness test possible, in every preseason, every in-season, everything across the board. And he was just building every year. He would just build his strength level, build his aerobic base, build his ability to train and run, and his experience. Like he was so valuable to us as a team. And you know, I think that then on the other end of that is you have to have coaches that are educated on that too. You know, and I don't know if that education or that awareness is there from coaches that, hold on a minute, this guy in his mid-30s could offer our team huge value, like as an athlete, like, and the game has never been more athletically demanding. And there's this perception out there that just age equals injury, and you're going to be sore and crocked and not move well. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Like, if you prepare for the physical demands of GAA, you will be able to tolerate those demands. It does not matter if you're in your 30s. Your lifestyle, how you train, is the biggest predicting factor of whether you're going to be able to play GAA or not. And that is I don't think that that's very aware, or coaches are very aware of that. I think it's more like, I'm living in Canada at the moment, and it's a completely different perspective. You know, like, your 30s and your 40s, are people are thriving over here in their physical activities. They do so much. Whereas, I don't know, in the GAA especially, there's this kind of underlying opinion or perception that if you get into your 30s, you're finished. And you add an injury on top of that, he's definitely finished. And that's, I don't know if that's accurate.
Yeah. I think it's kind of both a combination of perceptions of that belief, as you just said, and then also the bad S&C and bad, like, injury recovery, like, people not doing what you said earlier, and the two just kind of cycle against each other. So, like, you know, people have a perception that, like, when they do their cruciate, the amount of people who said to me, oh, if I did that, I wouldn't be able to do all that recovery. So then they think, you know, I may as well be finished after an injury like that. And when they do come back, they think, you know, I'll never be the same again anyway. So then they don't play as well. And then loads of people doing that then leaves a perception that all players will be like that, which then constantly cycles into more bad S&C, and that it just keeps cycling around. And for when people do come back, I just think that, like, yeah, there's kind of, if you're a top intercounty talent or you're a young player, there's kind of a, you know, there's kind of a want to kind of give it another rattle. But I think there's a nervousness with GAA teams around people who come back from serious injury if they're a bit older. It's almost like you're mad, like you'd be absolutely mad to come back. Like, I remember when I was younger and people would be coming back from injuries, and yeah, even when we're younger, you'd just be hearing it, you'd be thinking, like, that lad's mad, like, what is he doing? Like, that's, surely he's not right after that injury. Like, I remember seeing him kind of be carried off. But yeah, it is, it's an educational thing.
Yeah, like the body heals. Like, the body will always heal. The body is a healing machine. If you give it the stimulus to heal, it will heal better than it's ever been before. And like, in your training cycle or your rehab, you hit loads of personal bests in your movements, in your sprints, in your plyos. And I would think you're a better athlete now than you were before. So, like, and you're older. So yeah, I don't think age is an accurate predictor of your physical competency or your ability to move or your ability to play a game. And you know, I think what's referenced before a lot is like this perception that younger people are faster, and like that doesn't make sense objectively. Like, to be fast, you have to be able to create force into the ground. You have to be strong, and you have to have fast turnover, fast ground reaction forces, and good flight time, and all those things are progressed as the more you train, the more you sprint, the more you jump, the heavier you lift. All those things are fully controllable and fully able to progress into your 20s and 30s. So yeah, I think people don't understand how much control they have over their physical competency and their ability to move and play GA. And that's a culture thing. That's not, and it's a knowledge and an education thing. And I don't think it's talked about enough. And ultimately as well, it's harder to hear at 32 that you way more in you and you want to quit. And that's a bit, that's a different topic altogether. I think that's a bigger issue, and it's more of a, like a burnout or psychological issue that you're just not interested in the game anymore. And that's totally fine. But I think when people use injuries as an excuse to retire or as a reason to retire, I don't think that's always accurate. Because ultimately you can rehab yourself from any injury, anything.
I think that like the mental side of it as well, in terms of when you have that injury and you come to terms with, you know, you're having the surgery and, you know, you're at first you're kind of like, geez, you know, I'm gonna be out for a year, you know, whatever other context, you know, like this is gonna make an absolute dent in kind of any ambitions of football and ambitions you might have. And then you kind of come into the idea that, like, you know, what you have ahead of you, a massive surgery, a massive recovery, you kind of have then a bit of resentment towards the game that you were playing and what caused this. And what I found that, like, inevitably, either way, no matter what way you take it or when you take it, you're inevitably going to be brought away from playing for a long time. And that's one of the actual positives that I found, was that whether you're playing, you know, you're Micheál Murphy and your life is completely GAA, or you're just playing club for the club second team, but you're involved with the minors, coaching them as well, you know, whichever stream of it you are, end of it you're at, I think that, like, GA plays such a massive part in so many people's lives, and that they can't really imagine their life away from it. And, you know, I think the amount of kind of like social commitments that we make to, or social things that we, like, we exclude or we turn down because of GA. And when you do the cruciate, you're kind of forced to have a year away from it. And then when you come back, you realize that, like, A, like, you know, it was grand, you know, and B, I really miss it, but I miss it for playing. I miss like just going to the park to be able to kick, like when I was stressed out. And you don't miss it for, you know, like the pressure you put on yourself for, you know, for a club championship game or to try and get onto county squad. Like, you don't miss it for that. You miss it, or for the feeling of like, oh wow, I'm like great, you know, I just got called up to county team. You know, you miss it for, as I said, the enjoyment of the game, which is the reason why you got into it in the first place. And that's one of the kind of big lessons that, the big positives rather, that I took from a negative with it.
Yeah, for sure. Like the injury period is, it's a testing time just from the actual injury itself and the trauma from that, and the whole rehab process is, it's a difficult time. But, you know, your mindset was interesting through that time as well. Like you said, well, like what positives are here? How can I benefit? How can I improve? Not just as an athlete, but as a person. And that ACL period is if it's a year, you have a year away from playing, and you can work and grow in other areas of your life. You can work on yourself, and it gives you some perspective as well. I think in GA circles, you can get sucked into, you know, that there's nothing else out there kind of attitude, that it can be very consuming. And I definitely fell into that trap as an athlete myself. And it's only when you're forced, I think, sometimes to force through injury, through my own injuries, I had lots of those periods where, you know, you're really thinking like, you know, do I really enjoy this, or what do I enjoy about it, or have I been enjoying it? And when you start to do that, you know, reflection, self-reflection, you start to figure out some things about, you know, where you're going and what you really want to do. And, you know, the injury period and ACL and any injury period can help you in that process if you're willing to engage in it. But you have to be willing to engage in it. You have to be willing to try other things and grow elsewhere and work on other things outside of GA and sport.
And how much does that help you in terms of working with other players and also like a motivation for your work? Because, yeah, like I remember, obviously, like, known you since college and remember, you know, seeing you playing All-Ireland Under-21 finals and then going in with the Dubs and playing league games. And then, like, every time there was a period of kind of a breakthrough, then, you know, you were injured, like yourself. And it's just like, yeah, like it was myself and my dad were almost heartbroken seeing that happen, not to mind what you must have been feeling. And then obviously to come in as a physio now yourself, like that must be, you must have such a reservoir of like understanding and motivation to kind of to work with clients now.
Yeah, for sure. I've had a lot of injuries, two shoulder operations from dislocations and multiple ankle injuries early on. I think hip and groin for a period. I've had a lot of injuries, but the more I analyze that period, the more I start to realize like how unprepared I was, you know, physically, I think, and mentally. I would say, as an athlete, I was certainly reliant more on my skill level and reading of the game rather than any physical qualities. I was not genetically very gifted athletically. So yeah, like any time I got into that period of feeling good and moving well, I was just about making it on the physical front, and then I would drop off, get injured and drop off, and then I'm way below that level, that elite level of physical ability. And you know, to get there, I think you need a couple of seasons in a row where you're kind of where you're untouched, and you're getting, you know, it's like that accumulated effect of your training. And you know, you'll see that the athletes that do really well, when you actually look at their career, you'll see that they had like a 3-5 year period of playing at that level untouched, no injuries, and just they just got better and better. But I think like learnings wise and lessons for me on that period was, you know, I think I always had self-limiting beliefs around the like my true ability, and you know, one thing that I learned is that you don't know until you've tried and you really have some evidence for it. And I don't think I ever really gave it, you know, 100% of my effort, you know, outside of playing, around my prep, around the gym work. Like I had no interest in it. All I wanted to do was play hurling and practice hurling. I just loved playing hurling. I loved the wall. I loved the ball wall. I loved the skills. It was meditative for me. I loved that side of the game of it, but the physical aspect of preparing for gym and doing that extra work just never appealed to me. But ultimately, looking back on it now, it's so easy to see that, you know, if I ever wanted to express that skill level at a high level, it was a requirement, and I didn't do it. And you have to take responsibility for that. And I think if I had have had more perspective at the time around 21 or 22, and just like stood back and maybe had someone to kind of objectively look at me and just tell me, look, you're not physically good enough to tolerate the demands here of this level, and you should step away from the Dublin squad and work on these things, you know, because I was there for 2 or 3 years when Anthony Daly was there, and I was nowhere near the team. Like I was nowhere, wasn't competing for a place. I was just a panelist, you know, just there to fill games for 15 on 15 games once a week or once every 2 weeks. And you know, if I could repeat that time again, I should have just stepped away and just been honest with myself and said, look, I'm not in a position here to contribute, like as a competitive panelist or even push for a starting position. So I just wasn't physically good enough with the injuries I had, and I just wasn't tolerating that training, you know. And yeah, if the advice I would give to players in that scenario is, you know, you have to be really honest with yourself, and that is very hard to do. It's taken me a long time to get to that stage where I can just take full responsibility for it and say, right, you know, it's not anyone's fault. It's fully my fault that I didn't like get myself ready for those physical demands and the mental side of the game, you know. And it was a weakness of mine, and I couldn't get it there quick enough.
It's a kind of a mental trap though, isn't it, in terms of, it's similar to like what you're saying about players rushing back from injury to play that one game or that one training session, where like the idea of when you're in the Dublin squad of kind of stepping away to get yourself right, you know, you're there thinking like, sure, how would I ever get back in? Like, you know, where it's that long-term approach that we don't really have. And it is a cultural kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I remember playing a Blue Stars game years ago, and it was around Christmas time or New Year's, and like, yeah, I was out like drinking like all that week leading into the game, and I had one of the worst ankle injuries I ever had, and like it set me back months. Like, but ultimately, I got a late call for that game, and I should never just accept it. I should have just said no. Like, I didn't know that this game was gonna, I was gonna be playing in this game, and I wasn't. I don't think I was in the Dublin squad at the time, and I just saw it as an opportunity to go in for a trial, and like. Yeah, I missed half a club league, and I was just missing more and more games, and it's another injury, and then yeah, you're trying to rush back for your club, and yeah, it's if I knew now what I knew then, you know, just from an injury point of view, I everything I could have done wrong, I would say I did it wrong, and that helps me in what I do now. Like I can see a lot of things that you know, a lot of mistakes I made, I can help people prevent those and help athletes prevent those. And you know, I've been a deep thinker about this stuff for a long time. I was desperately trying to play for Dublin at the time, and I was reading, I was digging into everything that I could possibly do to get myself better, and I just wasn't getting better, and I just kept getting injured, and that led me down the path of physio. I really enjoy what I do now. I'm happily moved on from that period of my life, and it was great. I learned so much from it, and it led me to where I am now. But I'd be lying if I said I don't have some regrets for the way I prepared and my input and my maturity level at the time.
Yeah, I think a lot of it though is like, I always think of like your biggest strengths can be your biggest weaknesses sometimes. Like, and like that confidence and enthusiasm that you would have had to you know, you'd be grand to play even though you're injured, or the determination to play and keep going despite the knocks is probably, you know, obviously it came back, is the same kind of determination and enthusiasm, which is, you know, which would lead you to be a good player, you know, in the first place. Or like, you know, likewise for myself, the kind of the determination to kind of just general hard work and kind of determination would lead you to kind of making improvements as a player, but it's also what leads to constant injuries, you know. So I think that like the solution that I've found for that, or and I wish that I'd found at 20 or 19, was, you know, to have experts around you. And that's why I said in the GA, like one of the things with this podcast is trying to like increase education on things, all things related to GA, is that like we don't have access to this level of thinking, and a lot of the traditional thinking is just so far off. There's that, and also I remember you saying to me before that like the best way to not be injured is to not be injured. I think that's what you were saying before. You were told that by you were talking to somebody over there, some older guy who was in ridiculous shape, and yeah, if you can go through like a period of not being injured for a long time, yeah, you likely won't be. You know, it's a cycle.
Yeah, that's like you know, the psychology and the mental side of it, and they're intricately linked for performance. And yeah, he was a track and field coach. I was chatting to him over here, and he was talking about that prime period of like 17 to 21 of just like back-to-back seasons of injury free. And I know that's something like definitely in the scouting world for soccer and higher level elites and professional teams, it's something they look into, is that kind of season on season injury free, because that's where you really see, you know, when you stand back and you look at a player's like 5-year plan or 5-year growth, like that's where you can make the biggest changes. And the GA structure doesn't allow for that, because you know, you have coaches and managers coming in for 1-year period, 2-year period, 3-year period, and you know, there could be a really talented 17-year-old there, and he might peak at 28, you know, but he's gonna get taken in and thrown into a load that he's not prepared for, gets injured, gets hurt, and then that cycle starts. And whereas if these players are kind of, I'm not going to say protected, but if they're, you know, if there's a separate entity and there's more of a long-term plan around, like, what's the global plan or development plan of these players over their 10-year span, like, and like, how do we get players to like play into their 30s and play into their late 20s? I think whatever GA county or team or club starts implementing a structure like that, I really think from a development, from a kid's like development point of view, they're going to see incredible results. Not only from like a winning perspective, but also just like quality of life. And like, there's a bigger element to GA. It's, you know, I had this chat with one of my friends back home, and we were just talking about, like, you know, the injury list from GAs is like what are these people's quality of life going to be like in 35, 45, 55? Like, I remember working in Dublin, and I had a patient from Derry with one hip replacement at 42, and he was being seen for another one from GA. Like he had hip and groin pain for like his whole career, 10 years. And like, he's going to be massively affected into his 50s, 60s and 70s. And, you know, as an athlete now, you're very consumed at the level you're at, and you want to optimize your performance, which is totally right. And you should do that. You should constantly try and improve your physical ability, but there has to be some kind of long-term planning too for these athletes, like you know, and I don't think the GA is really doing a good job of that, even just like with platforms like this, education and yeah, standardizing some kind of structure in the season as to training load and gameplay.
Yeah, I think the two go hand in hand. Like, I think if you have the right specialists and the right experts around you, then that will reduce the likelihood of those massive injuries, which then you will have a better quality of life down the line. Like, I think the two are hand in hand. I suppose just a final question, if you were to give one piece of advice to players, if you were to go into, you know, to a minor dressing room, county dressing room, and give them a piece of advice on how, what they could be doing in their preparation to avoid ACL injuries, like the main thing for you. I know that everyone is different. I know we just talked about that, but if there was one kind of common thing that, you know, just could be an edge, or maybe it's not the most important thing, but it's just maybe something different.
One thing, a minor dressing room. So 18-year-olds, learn the basic qualities of human movement. So full depth squat, full depth back squat, front squat, deadlift, overhead pull, pushes, and core and plyometric training. Learn the fundamentals of those, and don't worry about, you know, your muscle mass or trying to put on weight. Just worry about getting competent at moving, like actually learn how to move. Get someone to teach you the lifts that we do in the gym, and get someone to teach you or give you advice on your sprinting and your plyometrics, and that will last you your career, like building that base of knowledge, because ultimately that's what it is. It's lazy coaching is not, you're not educating the athlete and you're not teaching them how to move. And if more athletes, you know, worked on those things, those fundamentals, I think they decrease their risk of injury, of not only ACL, but every other injury you could possibly get in the GA. More competent movers get injured and hurt less.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks a million for all of that insight, Sean. Yeah, no, it is. It's invaluable, I think, like in terms of avoiding the cause, dealing with, you know, the rehab itself, and then just all of the, you know, the things around it, because it's I wouldn't say it's a life-changing injury, but it's such a massive injury, you know, like, and something that people fear so much, and then it's something that has such an impact on people's careers and lives afterwards. But we'll let you get back to the surfing and the tanning. So, but yeah, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
The burning. Take it easy, Eamon. Great chat. Good luck.